So what I'm about to do is called Reflections. It's not a sermon. It's not a homily. It's not an address. I'm thinking out loud. So as I was thinking about how I would think out loud for a few moments today, a memory and an unrelated song surfaced almost at the same time. The memory is a childhood one. My mother had a large repository of songs and scriptures into which she would dip for instructive moments, such as coaxing her five children to quit grumbling about having to go to yet another church service. I was glad when they said to me, "Let us go into the house of the Lord," she would repeat, between brushing hair, fixing bow ties, switching shoes to the correct feet, and so on. "Better to be a doorkeeper in the house of the Lord than to dwell in the tents of the wicked," she would remonstrate to the unfortunate child who asked about going to the school talent show, which just happened to fall on a prayer meeting night. All five of us PKs were indoctrinated with the sanctity of the church building next door to the parsonage, which we came to know as the Lord's house. It would be years before my mother's understanding of whose house it was and whose people went there to worship became my own. That was the memory. The unrelated song that surfaced as I thought about today was written by Dr. Isaiah Barnwell, one of the original members of Sweet Honey in the Rock. Isaiah wrote this song after hearing a close friend of hers talk about how much she loved her Nana's house, in which there were no mirrors. "Well, how did you know what you looked like if there were no mirrors there?" Isai asked her friend in disbelief. "Every day, my Nana told me," her friend's reply was matter of fact. And it was that conversation that inspired the well-known lyrics, "There were no mirrors in my Nana's house, no mirrors in my Nana's house. And the beauty that I saw in everything was in her eyes, like the rising of the sun." Nana's house in this song is not particularly attractive as houses go. There were cracks in the walls, dust everywhere, noise in the hallway, and the little girl's feet were cushioned by trash and rubbish. But to this child, Nana's house was a special place where a little girl could see herself reflected in the eyes of a loving grandmother. It was a special place because of whose house it was and the people she encountered there. In my worship classes here, I have sometimes assigned students to write reflections on a chapel service, taking note of the liturgical space and how conducive it is to worship. I cannot begin to tell you the number of students who expressly do not like this place at first sight. Unimaginable, isn't it? To some whose worship traditions are not formal or scripted, and who are more comfortable with plain white walls and clear windows that you can see outside through, few or no visual attractions they might call distractions, all of this can seem overbearing. And then again to others, for whom these liturgical details are reminiscent of their experience with oppressive religion, the space may actually be painful. Yet it never fails. Some of those same students who are disconcerted by the architectural and artistic detail of this room find themselves looking at it differently once they've had a few worship experiences here and discover whose house it really is, and the people they encounter here. Many of them who undergo a tour of the chapel and hear about the rich symbolism behind its details from ceiling to floor re-enter this space with new appreciation and associations. They may not exactly agree with the psalmist or with my mother, for that matter, that they would rather be a doorkeeper here than dwell in the houses of wickedness, But they come to value this space for much the same reason the psalmist expresses love for God's house when he says, "Better is one day in your courts than thousands elsewhere." It's not so much the physical structure itself as it is whose house it is and who are the people in the house. God's house, God's people. As you heard from Carol, in 1925, to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the seminary, the space was converted from a lecture hall into a chapel. At that time, it was dedicated for a specific purpose as a space of holy encounter in worship. Many holy encounters have taken place since then. And if these walls could speak, and yes, I am riffing off Dr. Barrett's fine convocation address given recently. He and I are friends, it's okay. If these walls could speak, they would tell of the numerous and curious ways in which such divine human encounters have happened in worship. They might talk of the mission-specific hymns that inspired students to take the gospel message to foreign lands, maybe humming as they go, "We've a story to tell to the nations." They might talk of sermons that encouraged and discouraged, that comforted and afflicted, that affirmed and challenged. These walls might tell us of beginnings and endings, of births, marriages, and departed loved ones whose lives and loves were celebrated here. They might tell of painfully deconstructed theologies and patiently reconstructed beliefs. They might tell of times students gathered in the late hours of the night to pray together here, or of the early morning risers who tiptoed through those doors to find a quiet, centering space at the beginning of their day. They might tell of the one who entered this worship space with life-obscuring thoughts, only to have them unexpectedly dissipate in the moments of taking the bread and the cup in Holy Communion. These walls might tell of the moments when students who self-identified as non-Christian, and about whom some John the Disciples types complained that they are not of us, implying that the non-Christians' unsuitability for preaching or praying here, these walls might tell us how these non-Christians stood here before the assembly and held up a mirror before us, faithfully using our sacred scriptures, reminding us of our identity in refreshing, challenging ways, calling us beyond dogma and creed into deeds and words reflective of the message of Jesus. Each story told might hold a common theme. It's not so much about the iconic stained glass or the theologically rich architecture or even the recently reconfigured seating for worship in the round. It's more about whose house this is and whose people gather here. It's about the love of God shared between colleagues, the grace of God found in prayers of confession and words of assurance, the peace of God generously and symbolically shared through hugs and handshakes, the wisdom of God heard in well-worded homilies, the joy and mission of the Lord born on the wings of psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, and above all, the abiding Spirit of God that can transform any space at all into a place of holy encounter where heaven meets earth. And there's no telling what the outcome might be, other than earth can never be the same again. You might have noticed there are no mirrors in this house either. But when God gathers us here, God tells us over and over again who we are and whose we are, even sometimes what we look like. When God feeds us here, that identity is refreshed, refined, and sustained. And when God sends us from here, God reminds us that we are not alone, that we are empowered by the divine spirit to carry out God's mission beyond these doors. Thanks be to God. I have the singular honor of working with a team of students whose names are listed at the end of your bulletin and some of whose faces you've seen at the musical instruments and leading us in prayer. This is the group that plans and staffs the worship services that take place here. When we agreed on the theme of gathered, nourished, and sent for this rededication service, I commissioned them to write a hymn for the occasion. Stephanie Dorsey and Liz Fulmer responded almost immediately. It was almost as though the hymn was already conceived within them, waiting to be born. So with thanks to these gifted songwriters, I invite you to end these reflections with me by joining me in the singing of this commissioned hymn, sung to a tune most popularly associated with the communion song as we gather at your table, the tune of Beach Spring. So if you would take your bulletins and open it to that hymn, we will sing verses 1, 2, and 3. Verses 1, 2, and 3. Please rise as you are able and make these words your own.